This great movie with Danny DeVito from like the 80s. It starred Joe Pesci. Marissa Tomei won a Oscar for her role. And Ralph Macchio and Fred Gwynn's last appearance. He was from Car 54 and also The Munsters. He plays the judge in there. The plot is two New Yorkers are accused of murder in rural Alabama on their way back to college. And one of the cousins, an inexperienced loudmouth lawyer from Brooklyn, not accustomed to Southern rules and manners, comes to defend them. That's Vinny, of course. Studios 20th Century Fox. The original musical score by a guy named Randy Edelman, we'll listen to in a moment. It was released, but the actual songs on the film were never released as an official soundtrack, which is surprising to me because I would mention to Lisa here, this Bible Belt song by Travis Tritt just covers the entire story of the film, and it really should have been nominated for an Oscar. It's really, really good. I'm really surprised there. But later on, too, of course, we mentioned Yo Cousin Vinny, which was Vincent LaGuardia Gambini sings Just For You. So Joe Pesci, about 10 years or so later, actually did a whole album of covers, which had Pesci in his red suit, similar to the Usher suit he wore in the film. But tell me why you picked this one, Lisa. It's just a great, great movie.
I remember seeing this movie when I was younger, and I'm like, wait a minute. The guy from Home Alone and Karate Kid, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so funny. It's so many punchlines. It was set up perfectly. And I actually found out that, and you included this in your trivia about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those movies that is really noted by lawyers, judges, and they say that it was portrayed perfectly, the courtroom scenes. And the director actually had a law degree. So he took a kind of journey into the South and get some of that culture and to see everything down there and wrote it all together. But it's funny, the duo of Marissa Tomei and Joe Pesci, I think, is so perfect.
Yeah, they're so likable.
It's even more funny that Marissa Tomei wasn't even supposed to be cast as this, and they kind of took mm-hmm. a chance on her, and it was so perfect. Which is funny because they talk about cousin. Nobody ever said that he's noticeably 2 decades older.
Right, than yes. That. Yes, he's 49 like, at the totally time, and fit. She's 27.
Yeah.
And they actually have a little makeout scene. But you also, what I love about that scene is when they're kind of debating with each other, and it feeds into the courtroom scene toward the end. Like we were saying about mm-hmm. script writing, it's like, it looks like this little scene that's like, all right, it's kind of a throwaway. They're establishing a relationship, but it becomes so much more important because you see that back and forth in the courtroom scene, which eventually, you know, helps out mm-hmm. his case at the end of the movie.
Even from the beginning when they, first get to jail after getting, and they didn't know what they were, they accidentally admitted to committing a crime, which they didn't know was the murder of the clerk
mm-hmm.
in the convenience store. They thought they got caught for stealing tuna fish. But in that scene before when they're looking, they talk about, they're like, Bush's baked beans, what are these?
Right.
Which is now, you know, one of the most popular. So I don't know if that became popular after this.
That's true, yeah.
But, you know, they're in that scene where they're in the cell and Joe Pesci first comes in
mm-hmm.
and he
talks to the friend.
Yeah. They don't know what's happening. He's like, oh, it's my cousin Vinny.
Yeah. To me, there's a couple of interesting things. Like the first section of the movie pretty much covers Ralph Macchio and the other college character. So for the first 20 minutes or so, we actually do not see Vinny. They're covering actually what happens and set up. And you don't see those characters as much toward the end of the film. But it's pretty neat because I just rewatched this week. And it reminded me of Three's Company. Like, it's just Three's Company was a great, great comedy. And most of it was based on just things that one character understood and the other one didn't. And when
that's
they have
perfect,
the intro
perfect way to put it.
To when they have the intro to Cousin Vinny with the friend, it's just like one of them's talking about one thing, one of them's talking about another, mm-hmm. and it's very funny.
And you know, the whole movie, I did hear that his character was supposed to be dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the writers thought process on why he just, you know, keeps failing and failing and failing the bar exam. And he's actually the worst lawyer that you would want backing you up, especially in a murder trial.
Yes.
But then the director changed it and said that that would be very hard to portray.
Yeah.
So we're going to stick to just him being a really crappy lawyer.
What's great about it, too, you think of the old joke with what do you call the doctor who was placed last in their class? Doctor. Yes. it's pretty much what Vinny is.
Exactly.
He's last
in
the class lawyer.
Think about if you were
lawyer.
In that position. Mm-hmm. Would you really want this person? And it's mm-hmm. funny how they mentioned that the mother was sick. Because you think about, all right, an Italian family, that mother would be in the car at that court case every single
That's true.
Day.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So it's funny that they put that in.
Yeah, it's very clever. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff in it. This is what I like about this one. It's like an above... It's a above average comedy. It's got a good level of intelligence to it. Like you said, mm-hmm. the courtroom scenes, they actually ranked at number three. The American Bar Association ranked at number three on their list of the 25 greatest legal movies. Of course, like 12 Angry Men was in there as well.
Well, during the court cases, there were so many moments of that, like, aha, he finally has him.
Right, right.
So when he's going through all the pictures and he's speaking with the old lady who was a neighbor, mm-hmm. and he's like, well, what's that? And it's a blurry picture. She's like, so you're trying to tell me that you're seeing out of that window. She's like, oh, well, I didn't have my glasses. And then pulls out the tape measure.
Two fingers up.
Yep. And yep. then they start going through the grits. The grits is...
Yeah, the grit scene is great. No, he's like, what do you think you're going to have? Like, he gives him the menu, and he looks at the menu. He's like, I think I'll have breakfast. They show the menu. It says breakfast, lunch, dinner. Yeah. That's all that's on it.
Which is so great.
With prices.
He goes, so we're going to have breakfast? And he goes... You think? And you don't know it until you see the menu, and yeah. it cuts to that.
It's funny.
And it shows you the menu, and it just says breakfast, and it goes up $1 every meal. So it's a dollar more for lunch, dollar more for dinner,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is so great. Even the scenes when he finds out that Marissa Tomei's character got screwed over by the guy in the,
pool hall.
Farm.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy sitting next to him is huge and he's about to fight. Mm-hmm. Pulls a chicken bone into his mouth out clean. I'm like, yeah. I thought they only do that in cartoons. Do not want to fight him.
Yeah.
But he is. He's quick. I think it speaks to his acting and his ability too, but his yeah. character was made like that. It's quick. You know, just in the comedic timing of this.
Yeah, I love that scene, too, because he's basically trying to get the $200 that she was cheated out of because she won the pool. And he's almost practicing. He's like, he's almost like, you know, in training, you know, going to the bar and dealing with these guys before he goes into the courtroom. It's very clever. One of the other things that I love, I hadn't seen this movie in years. I've caught the courtroom scene at the end so many times, you know, on cable. It just seemed to be the one scene that was always showing up. But I watched this in full for the first time in a lot of years, and I was surprised at how many times I actually was laughing, like, mm-hmm. out loud. And it's hard. I mean, after seeing so many movies and so many comedies, I mean, I enjoy movies. And, you know, to make me laugh and surprise me is something that I probably had mm-hmm. forgotten from the movie. The part when he comes out, you know, the owl screeching.
Right.
It's like there's always something waking him up, mm-hmm. whether it's the steam whistle or the hogs,
yep.
or the 5 o'clock train that's supposed to be there at 4:10 right. in the morning. And then finally,
they go
to the woods. Think he's going
to
get some
escape.
Sleep. And then an owl's screeching over and over, and he wakes up. He's like, what the F
and
is
whenever
that?
He thinks
comes
he's
out
ahead.
With a gun. And just start shooting out at nothing.
Yeah, and whenever he thinks he's ahead,
yep.
you know, Marissa Tomei's character kind of sets him back. And mm-hmm. Mona Lisa's like, you know, they give those records. That's public information. You need to have those. And he's like, oh. So it's kind of moments of him just...
Oh, I love that, too. And that establishes her character, too.
Yeah.
And she's, like, always asking to help. And he's never really allowing her to help, or he's not really sure what to ask her. You know, I got the impression that he's not really sure what to ask, but he's also very intent on, I want to win this case myself. And, you know, at the other end is that, you know, that sweet relationship they have between the two of them. And they're very likable. And mm-hmm. it, to me, this movie should not have been rated R. It was only rated R because of a few F-bombs.
Yeah.
You know, it
that's
really
what
shouldn't
it is.
Have
it
been.
It was language. There was no nudity or sexual content. But the one thing about this movie, and I'm sure you noticed, like, there's no really bad guy.
Right.
It's just a bunch of people that are trying to seek justice
yeah.
in the way that they think is best or
yeah.
what they think should happen.
There's
but
one...
it's no, like, really villain.
Yeah, there's one thing that's missing. And this was just me being a little critical, and I shouldn't be, because it's a comedy, and it's like their story was over, but you never really realize what happened to the clerk. It's like he got shot and killed, and you really never realize. Yeah. It's basically, you don't need Beecham, to know that, you know?
It was Beecham County?
Yeah, basically two guys came in and murdered this guy, and, you know, he's never mentioned again. They just won their case, and it's over, and you've seen them going off into the distance, but that's the end of their story, you know?
It was great when he first shows up, Joe Pesci's character, and he's like, leather jacket, mm-hmm. nice shoes, mm-hmm. and the judge sits up and looks over him, and he's like, you don't show up in my court like that. It comes back the next day, and
contempt of court over and over again.
This, like, velour suit. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to get it dry cleaned after it fell in the mud. And the dry cleaner's closed. It's yeah, just one thing after another.
One of the more famous scenes, too, is the misunderstanding between Vinny and the judge regarding two Utes. It was a very Brooklyn accent. It was actually a real conversation between Joe Pesci and the director, and they decided to incorporate it into the film, where he was saying youths, and the director decided to write that in to the film as a little miscommunication between the lawyer and the judge, and it became very much a quotable over the years. One of the movies that he made this year, he actually made two movies, and this is a neat link to Coming to America. He made The Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy also that year, director Jonathan Lynn. Also, we mentioned that Marissa Tomei wasn't the first choice for... what is her name, actually? It's Mona Lisa, isn't it? Yeah, it's Mona Lisa Vito. It was supposed to be Lorraine Bracco, who would have reunited with her Goodfellas star Joe Pesci, which is actually another interesting link, because we have Goodfellas on the menu coming up as the next one, number four of Lisa's five picks.
I could absolutely see her in that role, but I think Marissa Tomei was a little bit better because it was younger.
Oh, absolutely.
Younger.
She's
it
younger.
Makes her seem, you know, a little more naive.
Plus,
she doesn't
history.
Know what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm. You have the history of Goodfellas, too, so you kind of be like, okay, what's Ray Liotta's girlfriend mm-hmm. doing with Joe Pesci, you know?
Of course.
So there's that there. But yeah, it was great. She won Best Supporting Oscar win. And a lot of people like gave her crap, but she was up against four women that year. One was Judy Davis from Husbands and Wives, who was great in that movie. And I believe Vanessa Redgrave and a couple others. But it's like, it was refreshing to see somebody young win an mm-hmm. Oscar for a comedy role. And she did great. And it's like, what do you really remember of My Cousin Vinny the most? And it's like, You pretty much remember her character a little bit more than Cousin Vinny, who's also a great character.
She is.
They're both
she's
so likable.
She's trying so much, and she's taking pictures, and she's like, got these developed, and he's looking through them.
He's like, here's me in the shower. That's going to be a case cracker. You're like, thanks, sweetie.
You've got it.
It's so good. It is funny. So this was actually going to be our scene of the week here. So would you like to do a close-up, Lisa? And we'll do a scene from My Cousin Vinny.
All right. Now, full disclosure, my New York accent is... May I add, Marissa Tomei's accent, I think, goes a little in and out mm-hmm. in this movie. There's some parts where it sounds like she has a mouthful of marbles.
Right, right.
Because it's so thick. So
I'm not sure how my Joe Pesci will be either, but I will try as well.
All
so
right.
So this is a point where they're actually going, they're in the hotel room, and Vinny is going to go out hunting with the other lawyer. So we had mentioned he wants to get the case files from the other lawyer, so he feels like he can bond with the other person. So this is a scene from My Cousin Vinny as reenacted by myself and Lisa Nichols. And Lisa is going to play Mona Lisa Vito, and I will be My Cousin Vinny Gambini mm-hmm. whenever you are ready.
You going hunting?
That's right.
Why you going hunting? Shouldn't you be out preparing for court?
I was thinking last night, if I only knew what he knows, you know? If he'd let me look at his files, oh boy.
I don't get it. What does going through Trotter's files have anything to do with hunting?
Well, you know, two guys out in the woods, guns on the hunt. It's a bonding thing, you know? Show him I'm one of the boys. He's not going to let me look at his files, but maybe he'll relax enough to drop his guard so I can finesse a little information out of him. What am I going to wear?
What are you going to hunt?
I don't know. He's got a lot of stuffed heads in his office.
Heads? What kind of heads?
I don't know. He's got a boar, a bear, a couple of deer.
Whoa. You're going to shoot a deer?
I don't know. I suppose. I mean, I'm a man's man. I could go deer hunting.
A sweet, innocent, harmless, leaf-eating, doe-eyed little deer?
Hey, Lisa, I'm not gonna go out there just to wimp out, you know? I mean, the guy will lose respect for me. Would you rather have that? What about these pants I got on? You think they're okay?
Imagine you're a little deer. You're prancing along, you get thirsty, you spot a little brook, you put your little deer lips down in the cool, clear water, and bam! A freaking bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a damn what kind of pants this son of a bitch who shot you was wearing?
End scene. Very nice.
It's like I've seen that before. I love that scene so much.
Very good. That is our scene of the week from my cousin Vinny from 1992. I think you did a very excellent job there, Lisa.
Thank you.
Mona Lisa Vito. You give Marisa Tomei a run for her money.
Yeah, that New York accent, it's not too good. I've been trying to get rid of the Boston accent for long enough, so invoking a New York one's not too easy.
Mm-hmm. And I had a little up and down there with Joe Pesci. I was a little Chris Earl and a little Joe Pesci there, and I don't know, there was something in between.
It was a combination. I liked it. It worked.
It's a combination, but pretty good for no rehearsal in our first try. It was nice. So anything else to say about my cousin Vinny? Would you like to move on to Goodfellas?
Yeah, well, I mean, sticking with the Joe Pesci, we'll move on. So this is the other film that I mentioned that's in my list that I can quote pretty much back and forth. It's Goodfellas.
Goodfellas. It's flick number 4 here today. Lisa Nichols and myself are here with you until 7 p.m. The show is called Watch This with Chris Earle on WMFO, Medford, Massachusetts. Thanks for listening, and thank you again for watching. Here comes number 4.
Goodfellas was a great film. I felt when I sat there in the theater, apart from the fact that, again, it's an example of a superb director making you feel him as a director, because, you know, you certainly are aware of the director when you see that film, but it's like you're there with those guys for the entire 2 or 2.5 hours, however long the film is. You're there with them. You're sitting in those dives when they're playing cards in the daytime. You're with them with their wives. You're with them when they go and dig up bodies. And it's just, you get the feeling through the talent of the director, how, you know, that this is how it really is. He makes you feel that this is what it really is. And it's funny and harrowing and informative and beautifully wrought. And I just thought it was a great movie, a great American movie.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Never rat on your friends, and always keep your mouth shut.
It meant being somebody in the neighborhood that was full of nobodies.
Oh, you broke it, Jerry!
You look like a gangster.
By the time I grew up, there was $30 billion a year in cargo moving through Idlewild Airport, and believe me, we tried to steal every bit of it.
You might know who we are, but we know who you are. You understand?
Yeah.
What kind of people are these?
Life is but a dream.
What do you do?
I'm in construction.
If we wanted something, we just took it, and you didn't even think about it. It was better than Citibank.
Nice.
It's great, but nice.
You've got some nerve standing me up. Nobody does that to me. Who the hell do you think you are? Frankie Valli or some kind of big shot?
I was living in a fantasy.
Look at my eyes.
He's not Jewish.
Mazel tov.
Roses are
For most of the guys, killing's got to be accepted. Murder was the only way that everybody stayed in line.
What are we gonna do with him? We can't just dump him on the street.
Don't worry. I know a place up safe. I'll never find him.
You got out of line, you got whacked. Everybody knew the rules.
Hey, Henry!
Here's an arm.
Very funny, guys.
Here's a leg.
Here's a wing. What do you like, the leg or the wing, Henry?
Okay, you ready?
Sometimes
for us to live any other way was nuts. Anything I wanted was a phone call away. And we were treated like movie stars with muscle. We had it all just for the asking.
It's gonna be a good summer.
It was a glorious time.
Powered by violence. On the streets where the violent have power, a new generation carries on an old tradition.
We'll be right back.
Let's watch this on WMFO Medford. This is Lisa's fourth flick of the five. It's Goodfellas from 1990. Great, great movie. My buddy Terrence had picked this on the second show that we did a while back. So I talked about Goodfellas a little bit before. I decided to put in some new trivia and some new music for it, though, because it's one of Lisa's favorite flicks. So I want to get a read on why that's one of your favorite flicks. It's just a great, great movie,
yeah,
once
so
again.
Yeah, so many of the gangster movies of this time I loved. Mm-hmm. So I could have chosen any of them. Of course, Goodfellas is at the top of my list for that. Yep. The acting in it is phenomenal. Ray Liotta's character is fantastic. Joe Pesci, Lorraine Bracco, like, it's done very, very well. De Niro, who I love. Yeah. I love almost every single movie that he's in. And honestly, could you, like, of course I had to choose a Scorsese film.
Oh,
in
yeah.
This.
Scorsese's fantastic. Just, pretty much every one of his movies I've seen, and every one of them is fantastic. Just how meticulous he is, and he loves movies. That's what I love about him. He just loves movies.
This is one of those movies that kind of puts you into that lifestyle.
Exactly.
And in gives you kind of that glimpse, as movies should. Mm-hmm. Movies should, you know, kind of project you into this world. Yeah, some tell a story, but some give you an opportunity to see a world that you may never see before, or you may never encounter. And it kind of gives you the, you know, like, tough man in this gangster, nobody
you
can touch me.
You get to be a gangster for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. And it's all the inner workings. And, of course, that's something people want to know about. It's intriguing.
Yes.
That whole era where, and I mean, we're from Boston. I mean, look at
with Whitey.
They're nothing like, what was going on in South Boston or, but it has a little of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great.
Yes, it was directed by.
We can talk about anything in this movie.
Martin Scorsese, again, Ray Liotta, who I don't think has done a better movie since. He's fantastic, but I mean, you think of him as the guy from Goodfellas. Mm-hmm. And it was just, Scorsese kind of wanted to get an unknown, and Ray Liotta was relatively unknown at the time.
So young in the, like.
Yeah.
It's funny to see pictures of now, you're like, oh, wow, he aged.
I love the scene with Lorraine Bracco there, and the neighbor across the street has, you know, it made advances on her in some way or another. We don't necessarily know what. Yep. And Ray Liotta just grabs his gun and pistol whips him in front of all of his friends and tells her to hide the gun.
Yep. And she's like, in the car, and she has, you know, her sweater over her shoulders, the sunglasses on, hiding her face. Like, she's this. He maybe put his hand on her lap, but this, like, battered woman, she's...
Yeah.
So, but that shows you, and in that moment, you know...
Yeah.
He's going to protect her. He is now...
And that's exactly what she wanted, too. She's like, this is my man.
This
he protected
the life that
me.
I wanted.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
One of my favorite scenes, though, is when they go to Joe Pesci's mother's house.
Yes.
And just like an typical
with the body in the trunk.
Yep. Italian mother, doesn't matter what time it is. They come in at like, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and she starts cooking a full meal for him. Pasta,
and his friends, of course, everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's like, oh, have a little something to eat, and you see a full table of food. And Scorsese does that a lot in the movies. He has just giant, giant things of food, and that's his actual real mother, which is great.
So
that's Scorsese's mother. One of the things I found out for this round is the painting that Joe Pesci's character's mother, Scorsese's real mother, brings out was actually painted by the guy who wrote Wise Guy, which is Nicholas Pileggi's mother. She actually made the painting of the guy fishing with the two dogs, which is so funny. And I read Wise Guy. It's actually pretty awesome. And of course, that's who Ray Liotta's character is based upon, is Nicholas Pileggi, who actually went into hiding and became a rat. Like, never rat on your friends. One of the first things that he learns. And, of course, the way to get out of the lifestyle is to rat on your friends. But what's great is, just like you mentioned, we had a clip at the beginning from, of all people, Woody Allen telling everybody how much he loves and praises Goodfellas, because it really puts you in a situation where, hey, you ever want to be a gangster? Watch this movie. Mm-hmm. You'll be a gangster for the next 2.5 hours. And it makes these people so likable, but they're so deplorable at the same time. I mean, they're murderers, they're thieves. And it's like, you want to hang out with these guys.
So many, because
maybe not Joe Pesci.
What it
but
is, it's power. And it gives you that kind of, you know, you're untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what... You kind of saw the success with The Sopranos, like that, and being in that family life, being the, you know, Italian princess, the mafia princess that, you know, gets her hair done all day and is taken care of, goes to, you know, the beautiful restaurant and is whisked in the back of the room, but escorted to the front of the table and serenaded by the singer. It's that kind of lifestyle of like, wow, that's cool.
You have Bobby Darin serenading you in the restaurant.
Yep. They're killing people. They're dealing drugs. They're stealing things from trucks. It's,
And then, of course, when they go to jail, they're making like full gravy for the day. Sausages, meatballs.
Sneaking in.
You know, cutting up the garlic with the razor.
Salami.
With two types of wine.
And I still reference that when he's cutting the garlic with the razor blade.
Yes.
And that's how it should be good.
Yes,
done.
It melts
so it
nice.
It melts in the olive oil.
Yeah, it's great. You see lobsters on ice coming through. He's like just putting some money in the guards, in the guard's pocket, and they basically get whatever they want. Yeah. I love the part too when he's like, okay, take me to jail.
Right, I know.
He's ready to go.
When the cops come and she's throwing away all the drugs and then he's just
the Karen
like
scene.
All,
Karen.
He's completely coked out and he thinks that somebody's watching him. It's just this moments of, you know, not slow moments, but kind of like subtle. And then it gets that high energy kind of.
One of my favorite scenes there is that helicopter scene. It's just fantastic. Just they're all coked up and like Scorsese does a great job with like the soundtrack. Like George Harrison is in the background. He plays Muddy Waters. He plays the Stones. It's just like just showing how paranoid he is, you know, through all the music just cutting together and the faster like MTV cuts of like 10 seconds of a character and then 10 seconds of the helicopter and back to the character and just like jumping around, you know, just getting your paranoid along with the character.
I think this movie too kind of gave you a basic, sort of like the Godfather series. It showed you the basic workings of how you move up in it, where you know, are just a delivery boy and then maybe helping out one of the older guys. You start moving up in the ranks, and then one person gets made and moves on, and the next person.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite scenes is when one of the bosses comes into the bar, and he's kind of going back and forth with Joe Pesci's character.
Right, right. Oh,
Joe Pesci leaves because he gets pissed off, walks out, then comes back in and just
takes him down. Yeah, with the shine box comment.
But
That's another one that's quoted all the time. Yeah. It's always quoted, the shine box.
Funny how I say that.
And
so
funny,
much,
oh yes, and that's when you really
funny
are like this
clown.
Character is so intimidating
and
menacing.
I say that all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it's so intimidating, so menacing, and it's just like wow, it's just amazing. It's like you sit there and you're like, oh my god, is Tommy going to whack Ray Liotta's character like midway through the film? You know, it's like you don't really know. But Ray Liotta turned down the role of Harvey Dent in Batman in order to make this movie. I think he made the right choice. And Harvey Dent, that went to Billy Dee Williams, played Harvey Dent in that one. And I thought it was kind of a throwaway movie, Batman. I thought it wasn't very good. So Ray Liotta made the right move. According to Nicholas Pileggi, he got some mobsters hired as extras to lend authenticity to the scenes, and they gave fake social security numbers to Warner Brothers in order to be in the movie. Unknown whether or not they were paid or not, but they are in the movie in the background. According to Ray Liotta, Martin Scorsese actually tied his tie because he was so involved in every detail of the cast wardrobe. He wanted to make sure it was perfect. Al Pacino was actually offered the role of Jimmy Conway, but turned it down because he didn't want to be typecasted, and instead played Big Boy Caprice in Dick Tracy. What a mistake he made. I hated Dick Tracy. And he admits regretting this decision, Al Pacino. Some more trivia here. For the famous Layla montage, Martin Scorsese played the piano coda section of the song during every shooting of each scene in order that the bars of piano would match up with the certain shots. And you hear the background of Layla, you just picture those bodies on ice and showing up in the car. You know, it's just crazy how well Scorsese takes music and turns it into something else in film, and it really, you know, puts those images in your head for the rest of your life.
I was gonna say it melds so well with each of the scenes that it doesn't deter you from what's going on, it only enhances it.
Yep.
And you know, that's credit to a great director.
Yeah, it's so good. It was nominated for 6 Oscars and 5 Golden Globes. And, of course, Joe Pesci won Best Supporting Actor with this, which is kind of nice because when you get up to it, you have Marissa Tomei winning Best Supporting for My Cousin Vinny 2 years later, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice. It's Aretha in the background there. So anything else on Goodfellas? I'd like to move on to the 5th movie, unless you got a few more things to say.
You just remind me that I need to see this again.
It's great. I just rewatched this a couple of weeks ago.
I think almost every other weekend. Yeah. It's usually on like A&E. Yeah. Like one of those like higher channels.
Just one of those ones too, wherever it is, you watch it. It's one
know,
of those movies where wherever it is,
better,
you watch
though,
it.
With the explicit language.
Of course. Yeah, I wanted to put like the Coke scene in there, but he
totally
says like 10.
You need those F-bombs.
Yeah, like this movie is a hard R. You know, it's all the F-bombs, all the violence. I mean, the beginning of the movie when they open the trunk and they just start going crazy on the body still being alive. It's just like, oh my
and
God,
you know? You're this like, is where the movie's going.
And one of the greatest lines ever, all my life, I always wanted to know what it was like to be a gang. I always wanted to be a gangster. Mm-hmm. You know, just a great opening line for the movie, and it just sets you up on that ride that you got for the next 2.5 hours. So again, it's Goodfellas, 1990, one of the best movies of all time, in my opinion. It's actually got an 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb. It's rated number 18 on the top 250 movies of all time. It had a budget of $25 million. It actually surprisingly only made $46.8 million in the box office.
I feel
office.
Like it's one of those cult classics, though, where yeah. everybody... And it's more popular now than it was, a decade ago.
The shame of it is it went up against Dances with Wolves, and Dances with Wolves won that year, and Goodfellas is the better movie.
Of course. But
it's just a great, great movie, and also the thing Scorsese is really going to be long remembered for, you know. Even though The Departed was great years later, he got his Oscar for that. He deserved it for Goodfellas. That's my opinion there. But let's move on to number 5 here. And then after number 5, we will do our quiz, and then we will talk about what's showing in the top 10 in the actual box office in the theaters. So the next movie is Lisa's number 5 of her 5 flicks today. It is Crash from 2004. We'll be back in a moment. It is Watch This on WMFO here in Medford.
People bump into you. In LA, nobody touches you. We're always behind this metal and glass.
How far can bullets go?
You thinking about that bullet that came through your window?
What's wrong? You all right?
I am angry all the time, and I don't know why.
Put your hands on top of your head, ma'am.
Will you just do what he says?
Now, do you have any guns or knives or anything I might get stuck with?
It's your brother's file. Kid's going away for life for stealing a car.
All I need to do to make this disappear is to frame a potentially innocent man.
Did you find your brother?
Oh.
Tell him to come home.
Keep everybody a certain distance, huh? What, you start to feel something in panic?
What I need is a husband who will not just stand there.
What did you want me to do? Get us both shot?
Get out of the car!
Give me the keys!
I just had a gun pointed in my face. And it was my fault because I knew it was gonna happen.
Heads in plain sight, step out of the vehicle.
Follow! Honey, stay inside!
Man, don't walk up on me!
I know this man! Get back!
Think you know who you are. You have no idea.
You had a conversation with God, huh? What did God say?
I'm trying to help you.
I didn't ask for your help, did I?
It's okay, Daddy.
I'll protect you.
It's the sense of touch. I think we miss that touch so much that we crash into each other just so we can feel something.
Something else, Winnie?
People, man. People.
So again, from 2004, it's a drama, it's Crash, it actually won the Best Picture in 2005 at the Oscars. It's an hour and 52 minutes, it's rated R, it's a crime movie, drama, and a thriller. Again, it came out in the U.S. May 2005, but it actually came out, I believe, in Canada and Europe in 2004, so it was able to win the Academy Award for 2005 Oscars. It's directed by a guy named Paul Haggis, who was actually the screenwriter of Million Dollar Baby, which won the Oscar the year before for Clint Eastwood. It stars Don Cheadle, Sandra Bullock, Thandi Newton, who you could see in Westworld, Matt Dillon, Brendan Fraser, and Tony Danza, of all people, makes a cameo. The plot is Los Angeles citizens with vastly separate lives collide in interweaving stories of race, loss, and redemption. And I would actually argue that Los Angeles is also a star of the movie, because you see a lot of stuff that's just specific to Los Angeles in the movie. Studio was Lionsgate Films. A guy named Mark Isham did the score. You can hear it in the background here. It's just really beautiful score. This is called A Really Good Cloak, which is one of my two favorite scenes of the movie. And I also have Flames coming up here. There's also music from Stereophonics and Billy Idol, as well as a couple of others. So they came out with a score as well as a music soundtrack for this. So tell me why you picked this one, Lisa. I'm really glad you picked this one.
Yeah, this is just one of those movies. And you know, I was kind of going back and forth. I was going to add Love Actually to this list. And Love Actually, even though they're completely different, have that same almost plot where every character is somehow connected to each other, these interweaving stories.
Yes.
But, you know, just like the name and the title says, Crash, it literally is just a crash of everything that you want in a movie. It's that sadness, but there's some moments of triumph for some of the characters.
Yeah.
There's, you have this kind of internal struggle almost with, do you like that person or do you not like that person?
And then just as you like somebody, you don't like them.
And then they do something that's bad, but then you kind of feel bad for him and have empathy and sympathy, and it's almost like every emotion that you're connecting yourself with these different characters.
Absolutely. One of the things I love about it is, and I always say this, there's good people and there's bad people. However, good people can do bad things and bad people can do good things.
Exactly.
And this movie shows all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Every single character, I'd say there's some that are more unlikable than others. But it's very powerful for a Hollywood movie to come out and actually get away with this. This is really an independent movie that had a Hollywood budget and was able to be made. And it actually got a bad rap, I thought, because that year, of course, Brokeback Mountain was there, and that was a favorite to win. But this is actually the better movie, I think, because it is very thought-provoking, and it does say a hell of a lot about all of us.
Well, also,
it's really good.
You know, not in one moment can you... For most movies, it either goes one way or the other in the conclusion of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You don't... Sometimes you can predict it, but this movie... It had so many interworkings where you didn't know where it was going to go.
Right.
And then you get surprised and then it spins again. And I think that it keeps you on your toes. It makes you want more and find out more about the story. And
the
acting was phenomenal.
I love the locksmith in it. He's fantastic in it. Michael Pena, I believe his name is. And the whole part there when he's holding the daughter.
Fast and the Furious, too.
Yes. And the whole part with the score we heard in the background there with the cloak, and the daughter has an impenetrable cloak that's going to protect her father from, you know.
I don't even know how many times I've
cried.
Good.
It's such a sad, crazy scene. That scene and the other one that I love is the build-up to when Matt Dillon and Thandi Newton meet
saves
again the second time.
In the car.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, you see the scene where it is kind of an incline in the road, and you're seeing traffic starting to go, and he's in his cop car, and he gets out. Now, previous to this, he had pulled over Thandi and her husband's character for being African-American, may or may not, allegedly.
The great Terrence Howard,
who was
fantastic
also
at
phenomenal.
It. Yeah.
He's another one of those characters where you're like, you feel bad for him, but he's kind of a crappy person. But he, you know, you got to feel some of that sympathy. But Matt Dillon's character runs up to the car to do his duties as a police officer and save this person from the burning car, only to get under the car and you see her character.
Right.
Which is this kind of jaw-dropping, heart-sinking moment. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Exactly.
This
You're
is
sitting
happening.
There like, this is happening. And it's like, this is the person that's come to save me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about it, too, is like after that scene, those characters never meet again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also about 2/3 through the movie. So it's like their story kind of ends, but it also kind of leaves the interpretation to, so what does she think of him now? And what does he think of himself by doing this and being reminded of how awful
it is. It's
what he did. Oh yeah. And it's just like, he's changed, she's changed. And I love the beginning of the movie kind of sums up what it's going to be about, which is what I loved about Goodfellas when he said, all my life I want to be a gangster. In this movie, Don Cheadle, he's in an accident with his partner that he's having an affair with. And he basically says, in L.A., we're all sitting in cars. We're all sitting here in steel and windows. And it just seemed, and maybe we do want to actually have accidents in order to talk to one another and in order to make that bond. Because in any other city, New York or, you know, overseas or whatever, people are out in the street and walking around. But L.A. is known for a drive where you need to go city.
Yep. And then in the background, you see the van getting in the accident and the girl getting out.
Yeah.
And then you're finding out who's in the van. And
and it's huge twists. Even in the last like
crazy
5 minutes of the movie, there's twists to the movie. And like you think there's a character that's like, oh, my God, just a victim. And then it turns out like, no, this person's really bad.
Well, no. And as the movie goes on it seems complicated because there's a lot of characters.
Yeah.
It was so well written.
Yeah.
That it made it simplistic.
Yeah.
In I guess a complicated form.
Right.
It was just very, very well done.
Well, he's a script writer and then his directing debut. But it just goes to show you, he took a lot of like the conventional things from a script and turned them on edge. It's like, oh, you think this person's just a victim, and any other movie will just show you this scene with them. But I'm going to show you something a little bit different about that, you know, and which is great. And I think, like you said, with Love Actually, I think even Pulp Fiction is kind of similar to that came out. You know, he took some of the style to that where it's kind of jumping around a little bit with the characters. And you get to see the backstory of Matt Dillon and his dad. You know, you get to see why he's such a bigot because he's been on the job for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see Ryan Phillip being new to the game, and you think he's going to be the one of the innocent heroes of this. And then he does something really bad, too.
In reference to race, it really shows you what people are talking about behind closed doors and in bringing that to light. Not saying that everybody's racist, but this is, kind of gives you, you know, a peek into everybody's home.
Yeah.
And what they're talking about, what they think is in private doors. Because, you know, you're walking, who is it? Sandra Bullock's character is walking down the street with Brendan Fraser, who plays her husband.
Right.
And, you know, he moves her inside into the other street, side of the street, when the young African-American boys are going down the street.
Yeah.
And then behind, and you think her car got stolen, so she's a bad person, but then she gets back and talks about how awful these people
are. But what they also show about the two African-American boys is you think, oh, okay, these guys are just regular, you know, middle class, middle-of-the-road guys, and then you see a switch with them almost immediately at the beginning of the movie. There's a lot of neat little tricks there, and I don't think any of them are unfair, you know? I don't think any of them are cheap. They just fit in so well, and the script is just great. There's one little criticism that I have is they kind of lay on like the racist remarks pretty thick early in the movie, but it kind of establishes what the movie's about. Pretty much everybody's saying something racist. But at one point too, there's also something where Like, I love the scene where Don Cheadle is in bed with his partner. And she's like, I'm not Mexican. My dad's from El Salvador, and my mom was Lebanese. And he says, well, you know, that's just wonderful that, you know, all these countries could get together. And how do they all work on, you know, cars on their lawns?
Yep.
You know? It's just like, and it's funny, you know, but it's like you don't want to laugh at it, but
there
it's funny.
There are those moments.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Same thing when...
It's like you feel guilty laughing
Ryan
about it.
Why Ryan Phillippe's character needed to drive alone because he had a flagellants problem.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's kind of lightening up a pretty serious movie.
Yeah, and the great Keith David plays the cop, and he's basically saying, you know what, I'm a black chief of police, and this guy's been under my supervision for 12 years,
he's
and you're telling
racist.
Me that he's racist?
Yeah.
Oh, this is new news to me.
Big surprise.
You know, it's just like you're an LAPD, you know? And he's trying to be holier than thou, and then you start to see, well, maybe Matt Dillon actually had a point, you know? And Matt Dillon is fantastic in the movie. I mean, everybody's pretty good in the movie, but he has these moments where it's just like they're very sweet and tender, and then he's just tough as nails, and then he's just creepy as hell, mm-hmm. you know. And it's just it's so well done. And I was glad you picked this movie to see this again. I've got pretty much most of the Oscar movies I've seen a number of times, and this one I've only seen twice before. And rewatching this, I was so glad to watch this again because it really does open up things, and I really think that. You know, it got kind of a bad rap because it was just overshadowed by, you know, Brokeback Mountain and another agenda that was there that year. And it's really the better movie. And I was reading a little bit about Roger Ebert. He was still alive at the time. And he's just like, Crash was a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. Siskel and Ebert, they gave it both thumbs up. You know, Roger Ebert and his guests that he had in there. And it won... 3 different awards at the 78th Academy. It won Best Film Editing, Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay. It was up for Best Original Song for What's in the Background Here, In the Deep, Best Director for Paul Haggis, and also Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Matt Dillon. He was nominated, but he didn't win. This was something neat, too, is I found out every scene there's a symbol that shows something
that.
About Christmas.
Which is interesting.
And I learned that on the trivia before I rewatched the movie, so of course I'm looking for things about Christmas as I'm watching the movie.
Which I was thinking about.
Sure enough, they're there.
So what were some of the... I know there was definitely a star in one of them.
You'll see a Christmas tree in one of them. You'll see a Santa Claus. You'll see the little saint that they have in the car. They have also a picture. They have Jesus in a number of scenes. It's pretty neat because it almost has this underlying theme of Christianity in there, but it's not really layered on thick, but it's in there. And it's basically saying if you communicate with one another...
Well, that's
and be
the whole
nice
thing
to one
with,
another.
With beliefs too, yeah. and what is right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The basis of what many religions is. What you are doing is a sin or is it not? Or
yeah.
So great.
It is a great,
another
great movie.
Another one I got to rewatch.
Yeah. So one of the things that inspired the movie was the guy was actually carjacked himself. Paul Haggis was carjacked, and that's where he came up with the carjacking scene. He just went on from there,
really?
Which is nice.
Huh.
But yeah, just a great, great movie. Anything else to say about Crash? Otherwise, we'll move on to the quiz.
No. I'm really intrigued by this romantic comedy after telling you that I don't really like romantic comedy.
That's okay. I was just picturing
not,
a genre for the week. And I had a gangster one a few weeks ago. That was your cup of tea.
Choice. But you know, I might be good at this.
But so what it is I picked 12 movies that people should see before they die based on a certain genre. And of course, there's more than 12, but I just picked 12 and I set the questions around those 12 movies. So this week, again, was the romantic comedies you should need to watch before you die. There may be a few that you haven't seen, but the good news is the first 10 questions are multiple choice. The last two you have to, they're bonus questions. They're each worth a point, and you can get a bonus point. If you get 7 above, you win a good DVD. And this week's DVD is Tomorrowland, which you said you haven't seen before. It's a Disney movie with George Clooney, and it's fantastic.
And I'm a big Disney fan, so perfect.
It's fantastic. So let's start with the movies that I picked for 12 romantic comedies people need to watch before you die. It Happened One Night from 1934, When Harry Met Sally from 1989. Annie Hall from 1977, Love Actually, which we talked about a little bit, from 2003, Say Anything from 1989, Four Weddings and a Funeral from 1994, There's Something About Mary from 1998, Forgetting Sarah Marshall from 2008, 40-Year-Old Virgin from 2005, Roxanne from 1987, Groundhog Day from 1993, and Jerry Maguire from 1996. So here we go.
All right, I like some of those movies.
Here we go. So this is the very first one, 1934's It Happens One Night was the first movie to do what? A, to be rated PG. B, to use sound. C, to win all five major Academy Awards. Or D, to have an advertisement at the start of the movie.
I'm going to go with advertisements.
That is incorrect. It won all five major Academy Awards. Best Picture, Director, Actor, Actress, and Screenplay.
Molly Gary right now is probably screaming at me.
It's a fantastic movie. Very, very funny.
Airways if she is listening.
In When Harry Met Sally, which delicatessen was used to have what she's having? Was it Carnegie's? Was it Ryan's? Was it Katz's? Or was it D'Angelo's?
I want to say it's Katz, but I think it's Carnegie.
What's the final answer?
Katz.
Katz's is correct. That is correct. All right. In the movie Annie Hall, which actor does not make a cameo? Sigourney Weaver, Jeff Goldblum, Truman Capote, or they all appear in cameo roles? In Annie Hall, which actor does not make a cameo? Sigourney Weaver, Jeff Goldblum, Truman Capote, or they all show up?
Capote?
No, they all do show up.
Really?
Truman Capote plays himself. In Love Actually, what is the name of the song Billy Mack sings? Is it Christmas Is All Around? Is it All I Want for Christmas Is You? Is it Love Is All Around? Or is it White Christmas?
It's either Christmas Is All Around or Love Is All Around. But they had it originally was Christmas, and then they had to change it to Love.
Maybe.
No, Christmas Is All Around.
That is correct.
Okay.
It is Christmas Is All Around. It was Love Is All
See
Around by the Troggs.
What happens with multiple choice?
And then they changed it to Christmas.
Myself.
There we go. Who directed Say Anything? Is it John Cusack, Amy Heckerling, John Hughes, or Cameron Crowe?
Those are John Hughes' film, right?
Say Anything from 1989, John Cusack, Amy Heckerling, John Hughes, or Cameron Crowe?
Cameron Crowe.
That is correct. Cameron Crowe. All right, 3 out of 5 so far. In Four Weddings and a Funeral, who plays Hugh Grant's love interest, Carrie? Is it Drew Barrymore, Charlotte Coleman, Kristen Scott Thomas, or Andy McDowell?
Andy McDowell.
That is correct. You are well on your way to Tomorrowland. Here we go, number 7. What New England comic appears in this Something About Mary? Is it Steve Sweeney, Lenny Clark, Sarah Silverman, or they all show up?
They all show up.
That is correct.
Very,
very good.
Because I'm like, I know Lenny's in it. I know Steve Sweeney. They in the first scene.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good. In Forgetting Sarah Marshall, who is Sarah Marshall? Is it Mila Kunis? Is it Kristen Bell? Is it Kristen Wiig? Or is it Will Wheaton?
Kristen Bell.
That is correct. Very, very good. Here we go. In the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin, what is the name of one of the 2-minute dating prospects Steve Carell meets? Is it Glenn? Is it Glenda? Is it Gina? Or is it Gina?
Gina?
That is correct. That is correct.
That's a funny movie.
You are listening to WMFO in Medford. Steve Martin starred in the modern retelling called Roxanne, which was based on which verse play? Cyrano de Bergerac, Romeo and Juliet, Much Ado About Nothing, or Edward II?
Much Ado About Nothing?
That is incorrect. It was Cyrano de Bergerac. All right. You have, going into the bonus, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You've already got 8.
All right,
so
now there's no multiple
land.
Choice.
There's no multiple choice for this, but here are the last two. In Groundhog Day from 1993, the groundhog and the main character have the same name. What is it?
Phil.
That is correct. It is Punxsutawney Phil, or it is Phil Connors. Very, very good. And finally, number 12, in the 1996 movie, Jerry Maguire, what is the name of the character that Tom Cruise plays?
Oh, my God.
I will read it again.
Wait,
in the 1996
Jerry.
Movie, Jerry Maguire. That is correct.
I don't know why for a minute I thought it was cute.
You have won a copy of Disney's Tomorrowland starring George Clooney.
I am a winner.
You will love it.
Excellent.
Lisa Nichols, thank you so much for showing up on Watch This. We do have the we have a couple of minutes left, so maybe we can fly through, see it, rent it, or watch this. So I'm going to name the movies that were in the top 10 this week, and you tell me whether or not you would like to see it, rent it, or watch it. I'm sorry, see it rented or skip it altogether. See it rented or skip it altogether. All right, so very, very quickly, let's do this. Lisa, you ready?
Okay.
So now showing in the top 10 for the weekend of 427 to 429. Number 10 was Traffic. A couple off for a romantic weekend are accosted by a biker gang. It made $1.6 million over the weekend and second week. It's got an 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb. I am going with Rent It for Traffic. How about yourself?
I was going to say skip it until I saw the IMDb.
Yeah, it's got a nice ranking on it for 8.0. That's why I'm like, I think I'm going to rent this one.
I don't
one.
Always trust them.
I don't know.
I'm still going to skip it.
Most movies with biker gangs other than Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I usually skip, you know?